You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. When was the last time you read the United States Constitution? It's around 4,500 words long, which takes most people 20-25 minutes to read. Now, I say around 4,500 words because it's not as clear what actually counts as part of the Constitution. There's the interlineation clause, there's the attestation clause, there's the signatures, and not all of those are part of the Constitution. Not all those were ratified. That's for a later episode. It gets super nerdy and you're going to love it. But the 20-25 minutes is worth your time. And if you read it, you will realize by the end that none of the words in that Constitution is Jesus or God. Our Constitution is deliberately godless. Godless by design, by choice, not by accident. The founding generation deliberately wrote gods out of our Constitution. And in fact, it pissed some people off in that generation. And there have been assaults throughout American history on the text of the Constitution to try to add Jesus Christ to it several times. Waves of Christian nationalism that have attacked our Constitution and failed. And there is a whole lot that is wrong with the U.S. Constitution. But the secular elements, which are the basis for the aspirational freedom and equality that we have yet to fully achieve, those are what made our Constitution unique, and they are genuine contributions, not just to political science and political thought, but to all humanity. And in fact, it is those secular elements that are original and unique. A lot of what the founders did was repurposing ideas from previous generations, from antiquity, not from the Bible. We know that from the Federalist Papers, but from ancient Greece and Athens and Sparta, and then from the Enlightenment. And those elements that are unique and original are secular. Our Constitution was the first to declare that power comes from people, not gods. So those words at the beginning, we the people, that we all love to quote so much, they're poetic, but they're so much more. They are a declaration of power. And it's not divine power. It's people power. And that godlessness, our Constitution was the first governing document not to mention a god or deity. Our Constitution was also the first to ban religious tests for public office in Article 6, something we're going to talk about a little bit more. But as you read, there's no mention of Jesus or God. And yet.
So help me God.
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 We've all heard presidents say it. We all assume that those four words, so help me God, are written into the presidential oath of office. But those words do not appear in the oath or the Constitution. In fact, the Constitution is clear on this. It's a document that is often deliberately vague. You'll remember that from your high school civics classes, right? The founders created this document that was meant to be an outline, and later generations would clarify a lot of those points, but not the oath of office. You were able to swear or affirm, which was a big deal, right? You didn't just have to swear. You could also affirm. And here is what the Constitution says. Quote, "Before he enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation." Again, affirmation, super important. Quote, "I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States," period. End of oath. Could not be clearer. And getting the language precise is crucial. In 2009, Chief Justice John Roberts flubbed the oath when administering it to President Obama. And then Obama repeated that flub.
"I, Barack Hussein Obama,
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States."
Roberts then came to the White House so that they could redo the oath in a second ceremony, so that there would be no doubt. This is also partly because there was a cabal of birthers out there to question the legitimacy of every action that President Obama would take, and now one of them is in office, unbelievably.
"Repeat after me. I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my
ability." But the point is that the oath is important. Getting it right, getting it precise, is important. And yet, the words, "so help me God," which are not there, are added. The question I want to answer is why. Why has this change come about? And that is a question that we are going to return to often on this podcast, answering the why. But I think to fully understand that why is to fully understand the modern fight against Christian nationalism. But to fully understand it, we really need to understand how it happened. How could a clear and direct command, in a document that's often full of waffling language, a quoted oath, how could that be modified, and that nobody seems to care or mind or even notice? How is it that presidents, in the very act of swearing to uphold the Constitution, are altering its language? How and why? That's what we're going to answer. So where does it come from? There are two stories that we hear about adding this language to the presidential oath. One you've probably heard, and one you haven't, because it involves a lot of original research that I've been doing and compiling since writing The Founding Myth. The two stories are the myth and the truth. And the myth is that George Washington added "so help me God" to the presidential oath and created this tradition, and that it has been happening ever since. Now, in my book, The Founding Myth, I trace this story back to its origin. The story, an American myth, comes from the godfather of American mythology, Washington Irving. Irving is the guy who gave us Rip Van Winkle and Ichabod Crane and the Headless Horseman and kind of a whitewashed U.S. history. This is the man who first claims that Washington added those words, a prolific fiction writer. And the other accounts that we see later on trace back to Washington Irving's, a childhood recollection, he was 6 years old at the time, that he recorded much later in life. And the six-year-old Irving viewed, according to the story, George Washington's inauguration from the corner of New Street and Wall Street. Now, it's not believable that a short child could hear and remember for half a century the final words of the oath, which, as we'll see in a moment, nobody else present, including the much closer adults recording the moment, heard. that he could hear this through the, quote, innumerable throng of adults over a distance of more than 200 feet. Words uttered by a notoriously soft-spoken man without any aid of modern technology and then accurately recorded them 50 years later is simply not to be believed. And when I was writing The Founding Myth, I actually went to New York and I stood on the corner of New and Wall Streets. And that's not perfect because Federal Hall is, it's a different building. But Washington took his oath on a balcony with no access from the street. Those stairs that you see there today were not there. But you can stand on that corner today and you can try to peer through the streams of tourists and pedestrians and cars. You can try to hear what is being said. And then you just imagine yourself as a six-year-old swamped in a massive, huge, thronging crowd of people on this inauguration day where you're at best waist high, right? Trying to recall George Washington's murmured words, which most other people mentioned that they couldn't hear, and trying to recall them accurately 50 years later. The claim is absurd. The truth is that there is no evidence to suggest that any of the early presidents, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, John Quincy Adams, added these pious words to the oath. We'll get to the first reliable contemporaneous account in just a minute, but it's worth pointing out that historians, serious historians, agree that Washington did not add, "So help me God," to the oath. George Mason University professor of history and author of a Washington biography, who also helped edit Washington's papers, Peter Enriquez, said that, quote, "There is absolutely no extant contemporary evidence that President Washington altered the language of the oath." Edward Lingell, editor-in-chief of the George Washington Papers, right, 60 volumes of Washington documents, also wrote a biography. He concluded, quote, "Any attempt to prove that Washington added the words, 'So help me God,' requires mental gymnastics of the sort that would do credit to the finest artist of the flying trapeze." Thank you, Edward Lingell. And it's not just that there's no evidence that Washington said the phrase. We have evidence that refutes that claim. For instance, we know that when Washington spoke of God and the divine and deities, he didn't really use the word God. In fact, in his inauguration speech, given just after his oath, he uses phrases. Great author, benign parent, invisible hand, almighty being who rules the universe. Right? It kind of makes it unlikely he said, "So help me God," over that more characteristic language. Now, the counterpoint to that, of course, is that there were some oaths from the time that appended that phrase. But we also know of George Washington that he was a man who followed etiquette to the letter, scrupulously. There's some funny stories from the founding generation of other founders, folks like Gouverneur Morris, walking up and slapping George Washington on the back and getting this stern, wordless look that makes them cower in response to this man who wrote the book, Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. That's Washington's book on etiquette. We also know that he is the man who presided over the Constitutional Convention for 4 months, followed the ratification as closely as possible from Mount Vernon. He knew, as well as anyone, better than most, the precise wording of the oath that was laid out in Article 2. He knew that Article 6 prohibited religious tests for public office. He knew that when oaths were mentioned, they were also allowed to affirm. Vice President-elect John Adams and the Senate spent the entire morning debating the protocol for this ceremony, the inauguration ceremony. I mean, down to the minutiae, right? How will I behave? How shall I receive it? Should I be standing? Should I be sitting? And these things seem absurd, but they knew they were creating traditions and precedent that were going to echo down through the ages. And these were men that had just thrown off a monarch. They were forming a nation that pulled its power from we the people. So settling on that etiquette for these ceremonies in a way that suitably reflected that we the people are the rulers was a point of national honor. And it would help forge a national identity. So we know that Washington meticulously followed this protocol during every aspect of the inauguration. It is virtually impossible to think that in the very act of promising to uphold the Constitution that he helped shape, that he oversaw the drafting of word by word, debate by debate, clause by clause, that he would all of a sudden throw all that in the trash and violate its terms by amending the carefully chosen language in the oath. And let's not forget that the Constitution lays out procedures for amendments in Article 5. It's not up to the president to just change it. He is not a king.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
In that book on civility that Washington wrote, rule number 82 reads, quote, "Undertake not what you cannot perform, but be careful to keep your promise." Washington kept his promises. He would not, quote, "preserve, protect, and defend a document only to amend it and thereby violate it and contravene it just seconds later." And another piece of evidence that I find very persuasive that Washington would not say this is that though some of the oaths of that time did use the phrase, "so help me God," in America, secular oaths were very much in vogue. So just a few days, 3 days before Washington's inauguration in April 1789, the House of Representatives passed their first bill. And that first bill was a godless oath of office. That was the first law that Congress ever created. And the original, the draft language of that bill had the words, "so help me God," in the oath. They took it out. They removed the words, "so help me God," from that oath. So we have no evidence, total lack, complete absence, vacuum of evidence suggesting that Washington used the words. And his own character and actions and history suggest that he would not have done such a thing. So where does it come from? What is the actual truth then? If it didn't come from Washington, and now we know it didn't, where does it come from? It comes from much later in American history. In fact, the tradition itself is barely 100 years old. The First World War is older than this tradition. There have actually been more presidential oaths, 75, than presidential inaugurations, 58. Now, I'm going through Donald Trump's 2017 inauguration when I'm doing these numbers. Presidents took the oath 75 times, and that's why I'm going through that, because it's a nice, easy number to remember. How are there more oaths than inaugurations? It's because circumstances sometimes forced those who ascended to that office to take the oaths in private ceremonies. Chester A. Arthur, Teddy Roosevelt, Calvin Coolidge, and others did so in private ceremonies that then were repeated later in public. Wilson, Eisenhower, Reagan, Obama also did things like this. And still others took multiple oaths to erase any doubt or question as to the validity of their initial oaths. We already talked about President Obama. Calvin Coolidge also had to do this. So that's why you see more oaths taken than presidential inaugurations. So 75 to 58 through Donald Trump's 2017 inauguration. The inflection point, the time where we see this tip from what is written in the Constitution to adding "so help me God," the inflection point of presidents adding the words seems to be the U.S. teetering on the brink of the First World War. President Woodrow Wilson took two oaths, a private oath on March 4th, 1917, and a public oath the next day. Now, private is probably not the best word to describe that first oath. Wilson took that first oath in the Capitol at noon. It was private in the sense that this was not open to the public, though there were government officials and some legislators, members of Congress who were there. And this, by the way, is really the last truly non-public oath. Every other presidential oath, even those taken without the pomp of a full inauguration ceremony, was recorded. So we can go back and look at it. All the evidence suggests that Wilson did not add the phrase, so help me God, to the oath in that private ceremony. Though he did add it in the public ceremony, which happened the next day, which I find fascinating. Okay, so again, up through Wilson's private oath, the phrase was used at most in two oaths. Okay, so the tradition dates to Woodrow Wilson. It may have happened once or twice beforehand. Chester A. Arthur in 1881 being the first one for which we have any contemporary evidence. And if you were really fascinated by this, I am turning this all into a historical review article that I'm working on getting published at some point. Still a ways out from that. Up through Wilson's private oath in 1917, at most twice. So that's two of 40 oaths, 5% of the time. But beginning with Wilson's public oath in 1917, 34 of 35 oaths include the phrase. So that's about 97% of the time. And those two of the first three times the words were added, possibly, you know, going back to 1881, the president had already assumed office. And the oath to which they were adding the words was purely ceremonial. Again, which I find fascinating. Because Wilson's 1917 inauguration, along with Madison's in 1813 and Lincoln's in 1865, was one of the few wartime inaugurations in United States history. And rather like some other times in U.S. history, the 1860s, the 1950s, when we have seen things like In God We Trust added to our coins and Under God added to the pledge, this was a time of national fear and strife. And in fact, a similar fear existed when Chester A. Arthur took his public oath in 1881. Though it was almost certainly stronger in the run-up to America entering World War I. Because less than 5 weeks after Wilson took his pair of oaths, the U.S. would enter World War I. In fact, on the day he took that first private oath, when he didn't say the word, senators had been filibustering to prevent conferring additional war powers on Wilson. 2 months earlier, Germany had resumed unrestricted submarine warfare, and the U.S. responded by severing all diplomatic relations. Just days before the oaths, the Zimmermann telegram, in which Germany proposed a military alliance with Mexico that would allow Mexico to reconquer Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, came to light and was confirmed as genuine by Germany. So it's this fearful time. And we see the United States saddled with another piece of public piety, like In God We Trust being added to our coinage for the first time in the 1860s, and then added to our paper money in the 1950s, and Under God being added to the pledge in the 1950s. So often we see these scars of Christian nationalism being inflicted on the country during these times of fear and national crisis. And another really fascinating part of dating this history, this tradition, as it's this kind of more continuous tradition, not those, you know, one-offs that may or may not have happened for which there's less evidence. It's interesting because Wilson was not always a politician. He was an academic first. And he actually authored a poorly regarded biography of Washington, George Washington, in 1896. There's a historian and professor and Wilson biographer that criticized Wilson's biography of Washington, saying that it, quote, rested on slender research and used a, quote, saccharine, flowery style and was generally of a, quote, low caliber. So you have Wilson writing this romanticized biography of George Washington, and in it, Wilson himself falls victim to the myth that Washington Irving perpetuated about George Washington adding those words to the oath. So Wilson writes that at the conclusion of his oath, Washington, quote, said, so help me God, in tones no man could mistake. So again, the modern tradition of adding God to the oath ties directly to the Washington Irving myth about George Washington adding those words. Myths are powerful, regardless of their truth. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.